The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
We believe in a future where we lower the cost of living for America's families so that they have a chance not just to get by, but to get ahead. Because while our economy is doing well by many measures, prices for everyday things like groceries are still too high. You know it and I know it. You know, when I was Attorney General, I went after price fixing schemes. And when I am president, it will be a day one priority to fight to bring down prices. I will take on big corporations that engage in illegal price gouging. I will take on corporate landlords that unfairly raise rents on working families. I will take on big pharma and cap the cost of prescription drugs for all Americans. Continue to bring manufacturing jobs back to America.
Do you think that the vice president needs to be more out there talking to reporters, talking about issues in a give and take, not just in speeches?
I think she should say what I just said in that sentence. She has, should be herself. She should be ready. She should know her power in all of this. And I don't give anybody advice except to be themselves and be ready and know the power of their individuality and their authenticity.
You have not had a public campaign event for nearly a week now. Tomorrow you'll be in Montana, which is not a swing state. Some of your allies have expressed concern that you're not taking this race seriously, particularly
what
at a time where there is enthusiasm on the other side. Why haven't you been campaigning this week?
Because I'm leading by a lot, and because I'm letting their convention go through, and I am campaigning a lot. I'm doing tremendous amounts of taping here. We have commercials that are at a level I don't think that anybody's ever done before. Plus, in certain cases, I see many of you in the room where I'm speaking to you on phones, I'm speaking to radio, I'm speaking to television. Television's coming over here. Excuse me, what are we doing right now? She's not doing any news conference. You know why she's not doing it? Because she can't do a news conference. She doesn't know how to do a news conference. She's not smart enough to do a news conference. And I'm sorry, we need smart people to lead this country, because our country's never been in this danger before, both economically and from an outside perspective. Russia doesn't respect us anymore. China doesn't respect us anymore. North Korea, Kim Jong-un, liked me a lot. He doesn't like this group. We are in great danger. We're in great danger of being in World War III.
You can sense in the room today, the press, thrilled they could justify their paychecks. Kamala Harris hasn't held a press conference since 2023. And that wasn't even in America. It was in Dubai. So Trump got the gang back together. Room was packed. To use the left's logo, this is what democracy looks like. Freedom of the press, freedom of speech, live exchanges of ideas without censorship. Voters listening to a man vying to represent them and serve them, unscripted, without cheat sheets and teleprompters. The media misses Trump.
I think Jesse's right. They get all excited. It was at Mar-a-Lago. Trump went on for more than an hour. No script. Answer, you know, I listened to the first 10, 15 minutes of Morning Joe today. And this is all that they were talking about, Trump's press conference at Mar-a-Lago, and how that this finally means Trump is finished. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on this rainy Friday, an unusual day in August here in central Oklahoma. We need the rain, though. We appreciate that. We come to you live every weekday morning at 11:05, I guess, to be precise, at the central time zone of the United States. That's at trumpetdaily.com or at the Rumble channel. just go to rumble.com/trumpetdaily. If you go to Rumble, make sure you give us the thumbs up, that you submit a comment. If you'd like to email the show, of course, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. So no press conferences for Kamala Harris. Everything has to be carefully scripted. All of her speeches, and you'll notice in that cold open how that she speaks as if she hasn't been in power for the past 4 years. When I get in office, I'm going to stand up to Big Pharma. I'm going to do this. I'm going to make sure there's no price gouging. Well, you're the vice president of the United States. You have been for almost 4 years. Why haven't you done anything with Joe Biden, with the fake president? Campaigning as if the last 4 years don't count. That's the way she sounds. And as I say, everything's carefully scripted. Then Donald Trump comes out, as he often does. He's easily accessible. And of course, the press shows up. They're, like Jesse said there, they're super excited. There's energy. There's electricity in the air. It's as if they're hey, we get to finally do our jobs. We don't have to just be propagandists again today. This is a New York Times article. I've mentioned it a few times over the last few weeks. It's from July 10th, so it's not super recent. But it's how Mar-a-Lago became the center of gravity for the hard right. So Trump, he has a press conference at Mar-a-Lago. They all show up in droves. But this is from the New York Times a few weeks ago. I mean, this is dangerous. And as I've mentioned in passing a few times, here Obama has lived just a mile down the street from the White House. He had his shadow government operating all through Trump's first term. He was persecuting Trump. He was spying on Trump. He was impeaching Trump. All of that from the Dear Leader's headquarters. Right there down the street from the White House. But here comes the New York Times, and this is what's funny, too. I'm surprised it's actually not six authors. It's Karen Yorish, Charlie Smart, and David Fahrenthold. All three of them had to contribute on this article about people who visit Mar-a-Lago. It says here, but since Mr. Trump left office in 2021, Mar-a-Lago has transformed into a White House in exile and the nerve center for some of the most extreme elements of the party's MAGA wing. Extremism at Mar-a-Lago. Extremism is good for business. You see the title there. It's hilarious. As I say, you would never, ever, ever, ever see anything like this in the New York Times. About Obama's mansion or Obama's many mansions and the people coming in and out of those mansions or the people mysteriously dying, you know, went out on the water. I mean, those kinds of things have actually happened. And the propaganda media, the regime media, as I so often call them, they just cover those things up. They just carry on with the talking points. And then every once in a while, Trump will show up for a press, and they get all excited. Hey, we can actually push back. We can actually ask some hard questions. Can't do that with Kamala because she never has a press conference. I mean, they were rare. They were rare occasions, even with the Dear Leader. It's been the same way with the fake president. It always is. It says here, this portrait of the company Mr. Trump keeps was assembled from the New York Times analysis of people and groups that have spent significant time and money at the resort, which has been his primary residence since his presidency ended. So they are monitoring everyone that goes in and out of Mar-a-Lago. It says here, the analysis built on a review of videos, photos, and other evidence of attendance at Mar-a-Lago found that events hosted by ultra-right organizations and political fundraisers now dominate Mar-a-Lago's calendar, and even officially non-political events can feel like rallies. In this gilded echo chamber, Mr. Trump enjoys unwavering devotion and collects the staggering price of admission. I mean, these are the lunatics that are prepping the country for civil war, as I've been discussing this week. They want it. Jamie Raskin mentioned it in February. The fake president mentioned it accidentally. There's not going to be a smooth and easy transition to power when Trump comes in. No, they're going to keep fighting. I mean, this is the New York Times basically going into enemy territory saying, look at what goes on at Mar-a-Lago. These people are extremists. These are radicals. It says at Mar-a-Lago, conspiracy theories and fear-mongering take the ballroom stage. The 2024 presidential election is more than a political contest. It is a struggle between good and evil. Well, here again, I've had another story I've been sitting on. I think it was the New Yorker. But Morning Joe, last week, I think it was at the beginning of last week, goes on and on about the prayers at the Trump rallies, the opening prayers. And they've examined something like 50 plus prayers. Here they examine who goes in and out of Mar-a-Lago. It says here, a vast majority of gala events held at the club since January 2021 have been sponsored by individuals and organizations aligned with Mr. Trump's style of politics. And those who oppose MAGA conservatism and its pervasive insistence that the 2020 election was stolen are excoriated. It says, before Mr. Trump became president, Mar-a-Lago was a magnet for Palm Beach society, hosting opulent galas from fall through spring that raised funds for some of the nation's most prestigious charities. But then Trump became president. And now it's turned into the headquarters of this far right movement. And you need to be warned. We've assigned three journalists to this story. Turning Point USA, they mention the organizations. They mention even names. Mike Flynn, he's mentioned. Listen to this. It says more than two dozen speakers from the Reawaken America tour, a far-right Christian nationalist roadshow led in part by Mr. Flynn, General Flynn, have visited Mar-a-Lago since Mr. Trump left office. Many have been seen there more than once. Many of these people, they identify Carrie Lake, Dinesh D'Souza, some of the people we've had on this program, Jack Posobiec. This is an extension of the deep state. We've got to follow their movements. We've got to use all of this technology at our disposal to follow every step. We've examined videos. We've examined photos. We've interviewed people. This is, I mentioned yesterday on the show, the police state that's forming in Britain. There's cameras all over the place there. And there's more stories coming out. They just arrested a 55-year-old woman because she got something wrong on a Facebook post about an illegal immigrant or what his background was, where he came from. So the police went after her. That's what happens when you have the Marxists in control. You see it, just, as I was saying yesterday, you just look at the tone and it tells you everything that you need to know. You look at this story, which, as I say, I've been meaning to get to for weeks. And it tells you everything you need to know. Nothing about Obama's mansion just down the street from the White House or how many times he's interacted with Joe Biden's staff. I mean, some of that's come out just because the press secretary has mentioned it. They're on the phone almost every day. Outside of that, though, what even on the conservative side, what news organization is going to assign three reporters to the people that have visited Barack Hussein Obama's mansion in Washington, D.C. He stepped out of office in 2017 and he never left D.C. What does that tell you? At least Mar-a-Lago's down in Florida. They're scrutinizing everything that goes on at Mar-a-Lago, but not at the Dear Leaders Mansion. No, no. That's altogether different. Look at this. I'll just skip ahead here in my notes to the just following on this New York Times piece. Here's a morning meltdown as they examine the prayers. I think this is in response to a story at the New Yorker. There's also a Politico story. Trump prophets are in a frenzy after the assassination attempt. I touched on that a few weeks ago. But listen to the morning meltdown as they talk about the prayers that go on at Trump rallies. This is clip 8.
You've covered this so extensively throughout your career, and you write in this new piece, Trump supporters attribute America's fall from grace to a variety of national sins, old and new. Prayer bans in public schools, illegal immigration, pro-transgender policies, the purported rigging of a certain recent election. Whatever the specifics, the picture of America they paint is almost universally biblically bleak. The premise of all of these prayers is that America's covenant can be reestablished and its special place in God's kingdom restored if the nation repents and turns back to him. Ryan Burge, a Baptist minister and political scientist, told me that these ideas have long percolated on the religious right. What's new is how many Christians now seem convinced that God has anointed a specific leader who, like those prophets of old, is prepared to defeat the forces of evil and redeem the country. And that leader is running for president.
That's they're referring obviously to an Atlantic piece. And in some of the clips I have in a moment, they'll talk with the author. I think it was just one reporter in this case, one journalist, who has traveled the country, going to all these Trump rallies, examining the prayers. And of course, there is a prophesied alliance between the one who comes in the spirit of Jeroboam in these last days and the evangelical movement that's brought out in Amos 7. It's discussed in this book, America Under Attack, and also in Great Again. If you don't have either of those books, make sure you call our operators today and request your free copies, 1-866-930-3024. Play the next clip from this segment, clip 9.
In fact, in many of these prayers, the stakes of the election are really ratcheted up to the point where Trump is considered, the representative of the forces of good, and Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, are the forces of evil. And so you really see the way that the election is being framed in these prayers as an example of how the stakes of the election have come to feel so kind of biblically, apocalyptically high for so many Americans.
That's the Atlantic author right there who wrote this piece, who examined all these prayers. And here again, if you just step back and look at the bigger picture and look at Satan's involvement here, trying to discredit God's work, because God's hand is at play. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt that God is intervening. I mean, the head tilt, the assassination attempt. Millimeters, just a few millimeters, and that's it. He would have been dead. They would have taken him out. He would have been eliminated, as the congressman from New York has said. Trump's got to be eliminated. He must be stopped. They went so far as trying to assassinate him to prevent him from returning to power. Here's clip 10.
If you believe that, if you believe that Trump is righteous, that everything he does is de facto good, it's impossible to see anything that happens in this campaign that goes the wrong way as anything other than the work of the devil.
So there you go. Now, keep in mind what we've said all along. God is involved. God is intervening. God is bringing Donald Trump back. But this is not This is not going to be the beginning of some kind of religious revival or a reawakening spiritually. The sickness, the sin, it runs so deep. It really does. And your Bible describes it in 2 Timothy 3 and Isaiah 1, Isaiah 3, so many other passages as well. But it is fascinating to watch this alliance, and in this case, to look at the radical left and to see how they're reporting on it. It's very scary to them. Very scary. Politico, I mentioned this a few weeks ago, Trump prophets are in a frenzy after the assassination attempt. It says this insurgent new faction of evangelicals believes in modern prophecy, that there are literal prophets today who speak the words of God directly. These ideas have especially emerged from within the non-denominational charismatic sector of evangelicalism, an amorphous and fast-paced growth edge of modern global Christianity that emphasizes recapturing the supernatural dimensions of the early church as described in the New Testament. Prophecy, miracles, speaking in tongues, and so forth. I mean, these people are actually into prophecy. They're talking about miracles from God. I mean, this is terrifying. This is scary, says Politico, says The Atlantic, says Morning Meltdown. It was only natural then that when the would-be assassin's bullet passed fractions of an inch from killing Trump, it threw the frenzy of prophecies and prophets into overdrive. Within minutes of the shooting hitting the news, a constellation of prophet influencers took to social media to claim that they had predicted this incident. Well, in fact, my father's forecast, and that's brought out in the latest Trumpet, the September issue of the Trumpet, his forecast back in June was that Trump would not be assassinated. He very nearly was. But my father said in June, God's going to protect him. God's going to prevent that from happening because God is going to bring him back. It's prophesied. So you can see the devil already maneuvering to try to discredit God's work, God's truth, God's prophecies by all these other false prophets that are emerging. The ones that Politico and The Atlantic and Morning Meltdown are really terrified of. Just lump them all together. They're all crazies. They're all wackos. They're all unhinged. They're all dangerous. Listen to one more clip from that Morning Meltdown segment last week, 11.
I'm almost just as concerned as what happens if Trump wins. I quote toward the end of the piece from a prayer that was given in Iowa, where the pastor who is praying promises righteous retribution for if Donald Trump is reelected against those who would seek to do evil. And again, I think that both sides can be guilty of ratcheting up the stakes of any given election to be too high, but this is an example of where if you believe that, again, God is on your side, it becomes very risky that you believe that a win is not only an electoral mandate, but a divine mandate to do whatever you want. And so I do think that we need to think about that and keep that in the back of our minds as we're looking at some of the rhetoric coming out of the Trump campaign.
If you believe God is on your side, that's very risky. That's very dangerous. Well, we better really be locked in to God's truth at this time, now more than ever. I mean, the Bible says that we ought to walk by faith, not by sight, not by what we see. Look at all these fake, false narratives that are all around us. They're everywhere. And as I said on yesterday's show, I mean, the truth is what sets us free. The truth is our only weapon. We want to be grounded in Bible prophecy. This is a quote from my father's booklet on Jeremiah. And again, if you don't have that booklet, I haven't mentioned that in a while, but if you don't have that booklet, make sure you call our operators today and request your free copy, 1-800 or 1-866, 930-3024. It says here, God doesn't have five or six different works. He has one work that anybody can find if they know the true God. See, we've got to know God. If you find God's work, God will be on your side. And you can know that in faith, and you can be sure and confident. The Bible speaks of prophecy as being sure, the sure word of Bible prophecy. That's where we get our boldness, our courage, our faith. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God, said the Apostle Paul in Romans. We do need to educate our faith. We do need to be grounded in the Bible. We need to be grounded in God's prophecies, for sure. It's not to say we never make a mistake. We're human beings, and we do have human nature, and we do have to put to death the old man. We have to crucify the old man, Galatians 2:20. We need God's help and guidance and direction. We need his counsel. We need his protection. We need his support. My father writes, where is God? This is the only question that will lead us to God. If we don't know where God is, the God whose countenance shines like the sun in its full strength, then we are dangerously deceived. See, there's a little bit of truth in the world of traditional Christianity. There's a little bit of truth in that that morning meltdown segment. I mean, it is dangerous to think God is on your side when he's not. It is dangerous. I mean, there's scriptures in Ezekiel where God says, I'm against you. Those are not popular verses. It's not a popular message. It's not going to win a popularity contest. But that's God's assessment as he looks at our nations today. I mean, look at the sickness. Look at the sin. Look at what we promote. Look at what we spread around the world. And we're proud of it. It says God is always revealing present truth based on what he has revealed in the past. That means there's always a powerful work. If his people are submissive, God provides an open door through which we can deliver his revealed truth. I mean, you can find God, you can find his work. Just look for the miracles. Look for God's miraculous hand. My father says, if we're going to build for God, we must start on this foundation. Where is God? I mean, that's the most important question. The very first chapter in Mystery of the Ages. Who or what is God? What is God doing? Where is God? That's what my father's asking here in this booklet. Later on in that same passage, He quotes from Jeremiah 23. I think it's Urijah, the guy who basically came along with a similar message to Jeremiah, but he didn't have God's backing. God was not with him. God was not on his side. And when push comes to shove, that false prophet, that's what he was. He took off running. He fled. He cowered in fear. I mean, a true minister is going to stand. You see so many wonderful examples of it in the Bible, in Hebrews 11. Standing up for God all the way through to the end. There's plenty of examples, too, where they surrendered to the forces of evil. But God says, look, you're either on the side, just to go back to this example in Jeremiah 23, you're either on the side of my prophet, or you're against me. There's no in between. It's not like I've got, you know, two dozen different works. Jesus, when he established the church, he said, I will build my church. And it would continue, even in the face of persecution. And that's something that makes it pretty obvious, too, where the church of God is even to this day. because so many denominations out, they've never been persecuted. It's a wide open door. Anyone can come into the congregation, just like anyone can come into America right now. The doors are wide open. But with respect to God's church, God's people, you see Jesus talking to ministers in the New Testament, talking to us, even in these last days, saying, read Acts 20, for example. Grievous wolves are going to come after you. They're going to come after your congregations. They're going to come after your people. I mean, what popular minister out there preaches a message like that? As I say, it's a wide open door. It's a revolving door. Come in and out, come and go as you please. But God says to true ministers, you're shepherds. You better protect the flock. You better look after the sheep. These are dangerous times. The devil's going to try to pick them off. The devil's even going to try to corrupt you and make you into a false minister where you deceive people, where you go after the flock as if it's yours and not Christ's. That's straight out of the book of Acts. That's straight out of the Bible. That's New Testament theology. Jesus, when he talked to his disciples in Matthew 10, he said, go and find those lost tribes, those scattered sheep. He never talks about the church as being this one massive universal, organization that, okay, then it kind of spread out into hundreds of denominations when there was a little division a few centuries ago. He talks about a little flock scattered, persecuted, on the run. You can read that history in Revelation 2 and 3. We have a wonderful booklet, by the way, A True History of God's True Church. You can get to that at the website, thetrumpet.com. You can see a picture there of the book right there. Call our operators today and request your free copy, 1-866-930-3024. Well, I went ahead in my notes to the last few pages, so I just backed up. Now I'm back to page one. We'll get back to page one when we come back. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Daily news, Bible prophecy. See the connection on The Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need The Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need The Trumpet Daily. Only The Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to trumpetdaily.com.
Russian forces in occupied Ukraine will conduct military exercises simulating the use of nuclear weapons on the battlefield, according to a July 31st statement from Moscow's defense ministry. The drills will involve Russian soldiers in the southern and central military districts. They will practice securing tactical nuclear warheads onto Russia's Iskander-M ballistic missiles, loading the missiles onto warplanes, and launching them at Ukrainian targets. Tactical nuclear weapons are intended for use on a battlefield with a specific, well-defined target, instead of flattening entire cities, as strategic nuclear weapons do. These Russian drills are alarming to many Europeans, as they are only the latest sign of Russia's belligerence. When Russia invaded Ukraine in 2014, Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury predicted that the invasion would prompt Europe to militarize and unify. The people of Europe watched Russia's annexation of Crimea with dread. Today, as they observe Russia's ongoing full-scale war on Ukraine and now its nuclear training drills, that fear is intensifying. It is driving European countries to bolster their military power and work towards military unification. To learn more about the true significance of the Ukraine crisis and how it ties into end-time Bible prophecy, read The Ukraine War Will Not Start World War III. Venezuelan dictator Nicolas Maduro announced the preparation of two maximum security re-education prisons on August 1st that will be used to detain his political opponents. Venezuela's July 28th presidential election was fraudulent. Many in the nation protested Maduro's vote rigging, and at least 19 died in clashes with security services. Instead of trying to prove his claim to the presidency, Maduro revealed that 1,200 protesters have been captured and that another 1,000 are being pursued. These protesters will face forced labor in the two re-education prisons. The Bible prophesies that authoritarian dictators like Maduro will become more prominent in this modern age. This trend is setting the stage for end-time events. To learn more, read The New Strongman Age. At least 5 U.S. personnel were wounded on August 5th after rockets were fired at the Ain al-Assad airbase in western Iraq. The base is the main host of U.S. forces in Iraq. The attack on Ain al-Assad marked a dangerous escalation and demonstrated Iran's destabilizing role in the region, said U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. No group has claimed responsibility for the attack, but U.S. officials indicate it was likely part of Iran's response to the assassination of Hamas's top leader last week. As tensions continue to worsen in the Middle East, Iraq wants the U.S. to withdraw its 2,500 troops from Iraqi soil. Iraq has already fallen under Iran's control, as Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry predicted 30 years ago based on Bible prophecy. To learn more about the prophetic significance of the U.S. withdrawal from this key region, read He Was Right About Iraq. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.
There you go. I forgot to mention the latest installment of World Watch. You just saw it right there. That's a weekly tradition that we have every Friday. Don't forget also about Trumpet World. If you want a wider perspective of all the events going on in the world today, Richard Palmer is the host of that program, and he records that every Wednesday and then Friday as well. So you've got a new installment of Trumpet World for this weekend also. As I said, I went a little off script in the first segment. For all we know, I may have narrowly escaped an assassin's bullet with that little diversion. I finally got to some stories that have been sitting in the news stack for quite some time, and it's good to get through. I came in and told my producer I nearly gave him the show about an hour before going to air because I just wasn't feeling it for some reason. Usually I do. Usually I'm just hyped up on adrenaline as I get ready for 11:05. This morning was a little bit different. It's been a busy week, I suppose, but God always gives us the helping hand, that's for sure. I mentioned that verse, 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 7, we walk by faith, not by sight. I mean, it's so important that we walk according to faith, faith toward Christ, as it says in Acts 20. Faith toward God, as it says in Hebrews 6. It's so important that God directs our steps because we're living in a world full of deception. Revelation 12, 9. We're living in a world that is full of lies and fakery. We're just saturated in it. And Kamala's campaign, not unlike the one four years ago with basement Joe Biden, it's totally fake. It's totally scripted. All that you need to know about her campaign is those phone conversations that they film, that they script, that they then post. I mean, these people They are so sold on narratives. That's all that matters. There's nobody in her ear saying, hey, let's try to do something that's just kind of natural, spontaneous. You know, you're just chatting it up with some Midwestern voters. Instead, they fake it all. Oh, Walz, he's Midwestern. He's rural. Rural. It's totally fake. Trump, for his part, it's not that he doesn't have flaws. Far from it. But he shows up to the microphone and he just starts speaking. Or he shows up at a rally and he goes off the prompter and it saves his life. And then the press, like Jesse said in that cold open, you can tell they just get all excited. They miss Trump. They miss actually doing their job. They miss actually hearing someone give a press conference and not just accepting every single talking point. I mean, they're obviously at the other extreme when Trump shows up. They're like Jim Acosta, just constantly attacking, keeping track of every lie. Everything he says is a lie. Then he shows up for a press conference, and the room is packed full of journalists. A fake world. 1 John 4 and verse 1. It says, beloved, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits, whether they are of God, because many false prophets are gone out into the world. That's what your Bible says. It's like I said in that first segment. There's lots of false prophets. There's lots of Urijahs that come along. They may even have a message very similar to the prophets, God's prophet. But is it backed by God? Is God on their side? That's all that matters. If we're not on God's side, we're standing against God. We've got to be with God. I mean, that's the essence of the first and great commandment, to put God and the things of God above all else, everything else, to worship God above everything else, to walk by faith. Jesus said in Luke 18, I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, shall he find faith on the earth? When Christ returns, I mean, you see that doctrine all through the Bible as well. The Pharisees of Christ's day, I mean, they misunderstood the timing. And they opposed Jesus largely because they thought he was coming as the prophesied king to take over their positions of authority right then and there. And this threatened them. So they fought against Christ. Even at the trial that Pilate oversaw, he talked about being king of the Jews. And the Jews didn't like that, did they? They didn't want that label to be on the crucified Christ. That was the point of opposition from start to finish during Christ's ministry. The fact that he's prophesied to rule, to reign supreme. You can see it in Luke chapter 1, verses 30 through 33. You see it in the Old Testament. Read through Zechariah 14 sometime. It talks about what actually happens physically when Jesus returns to this earth. And there's precious few people that even believe that will happen. They think it's some kind of ethereal nothing that's in the heart of a Christian. It's just in your heart. The whole gospel that Jesus proclaimed revolved around the coming of God's kingdom on earth. Why aren't there more people that believe that teach that? Well, because we're living in a world full of fakery and phoniness, even in the religious world. And you certainly see it in the political world. This is a tweet going out about, as you heard in the cold open, how Kamala's not doing any interviews. Everything's just perfectly scripted. She can't go off script. Otherwise, it would be a disaster. Someone tweeted this out. The intricately stage-managed system carefully constructed to hide and manage what everyone understands now as Biden's dementia, has been repurposed to do the same for Kamala, except she's not demented. She's just horribly dumb. I mean, that's his words. She's young, she's not demented, and yet the same people that carefully scripted this narrative for the fake president, now they've moved over to Kamala. I mean, they get a little excited and giddy when they can go to a press conference with Trump, because there's going to be some, you know, some energy. There's going to be some activity. There's going to be some back and forth. But with respect to their side, the side of the regime, I mean, everything has to be just as scripted as a Kamala Harris rally speech. It's the same mentality. This is from The Atlantic. The Harris-Walls campaign's message of joy has extended to that most relatable of things, food. Here the New York Times is assigning three reporters to the traffic in and out of Mar-a-Lago. And then on the other hand, you've got this at The Atlantic. Food. Kamala and food. Wow, that's some serious journalism right there. It's all part of the script, isn't it? Over at The Federalist, you get a little bit more truth at The Federalist. The Kamala media blackout would be amazing if she weren't running for president. How do you even explain this? I mean, it's been a total blackout. She's running for president. The past month has likely been the most eventful in American political history. Yet the two top officials of the most powerful nation in the world won't answer any genuine questions. They won't. Or when they do, it's carefully scripted. And even then, as I played yesterday, you've got the fake president saying there will be no peaceful transfer of power if Trump wins. Excuse me, if he loses, no peaceful transfer of power. He said the quiet part out loud. Think about what's happened in the last 6 weeks. The debate, June 27th, the assassination attempt, July 13th. Biden finally announcing that he's not going to run for re-election. That was July, 21st or 2nd, I forget. Kamala then being the anointed one. Kamala now the second coming of Obama. I mean, these are earth-shaking developments, and no press conferences for Kamala or the fake president. Nobody examining the dear leader's house, who's going in and out of the dear leader's home, his mansion in D.C. None of that. But we do have the Atlantic piece on food. Okay, got it. It says here, then again, not one journalist in the corporate or legacy media has explained how Biden's obvious senility could turn from a democracy-corroding MAGA misinformation operation into an accepted reality in a single day. It just took one day. It was within seconds after the debate. June 27th. We'll never forget it. For 3.5 years, they said it was a conspiracy to question his mental acuity. And on a dime, the regime media, they pivoted instantly, all together, all in unison. These same people, by the way, judging by the first 15 minutes of Morning Meltdown today, they're now experts in senility because Trump is losing it. Trump is old. Trump is 78. Trump loses his train of thought. The press conference yesterday reveals that he's not all there. Now they're experts on dementia. These people that covered up an obvious case of dementia for 3.5 years. Now you see, with the Kamala narratives out there, she's like Obama. She's more popular than any person in America. And she's not demented. So now we can go after Trump. And Trump comes out for an hour. A press conference sparring with the journalist for an hour. It says here, if they were fooled for 3 years, how can we trust them? The Federalists here talking about the media, the regime media. They weren't fooled. They were lying. And then once they get the memo, they can pivot on a dime. No problem. How can we trust them? If they weren't fooled and they didn't tell us, how can we trust them? If they were fooled, how can we trust them? If they were lying, how can we trust them? It's a good question. Well, we can't, because they're back at it. The Democrats' new presidential candidate, who's never won a single primary vote, might have been crowned, but hasn't given a real interview or even an extemporaneous political statement since Democrat bigwigs pushed Biden aside. In a functioning liberal democracy, this would be pretty big news. Well, I think they're right. If the democracy was functioning, the press corps would be outraged. Would they be screaming? Where is Kamala? Listen to Molly Hemingway's take. She's also works for the Federalist. This was her take on the regime media just being fully in the tank for Kamala. Clip two.
Frankly, shocking how little interaction this woman has had with the corporate media. She does have the corporate media completely in her pocket. And I just have to say, there's nothing mainstream about the so-called mainstream media. They are far left. They tend to help her out with her politics. But it reminds me so much of what we saw in the 2020 race when Joe Biden was allowed, through the complete help of that corporate media, to run his campaign from the basement, to barely speak publicly, to only do so in completely protected fashion. And the result of that is that we have a country and a world in chaos. We have a president who people have not seen in a long time, who they're not fully confident in his ability to handle things, a world on fire, an economy that is not good. You know, we had a stock market crisis earlier this week. We have inflation problems that have been going on for years, a completely open border, crime out of control, and the media are not asking him any questions, and they're not asking her any questions. And it just feels like this massive gaslighting of the country because the media are not doing their jobs at a time of not just national crisis, but global crisis.
That's a good point there at the end. Global crisis as well. I mean, what are China, Russia, Iran, Europe, Germany? What are they thinking at this moment where you've got a president, a fake one at that, who's disappeared? And then the same party's putting forth a candidate who also is not available. The press, they just can't get to her. And we've got a global crisis. We've got all these crises here in the United States. We better buckle up for the next 90 or so days. Well, even after that. From the election until the inauguration, we've talked about the possibility of outright war here at home sometime around the inauguration. We better buckle up, and we better walk by faith, and we better be using the truth of God as the weapon that it is. This Federalist piece, it says, the last time the Vice President of the United States had a press conference was in December of 2023. That's it. And like Jesse brought out in that cold open, that was overseas somewhere. The Federalist says here, what is the incentive for Kamala to take more questions? A person close to Harris's campaign told Politico recently, she's getting out exactly the message she wants to get out. It's all about the precious, fake, fraudulent narrative. Why should she take questions? She's getting out the message that she wants to get out. And of course, the regime media is happy to help her do that. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show. We thank so many of you for joining us all week, and we'll see you next time.